Hello there, wonderful friends. I'm so thrilled that you decided to join me, your happy and mostly non-theoretical hostess, Jenna, for the show today. That's Monday, May 22nd, 2023. First, an update. The pasta so precipitously plopped by a stream in New Jersey last week? Well, it turns out that a guy was cleaning out his mom's house, and she had had a lot of pasta, and instead of donating it or something like that, he just dumped it out in the wild. Mystery solved. A bit of good news for lovers of the green. For 20 friendly folks and all of the lovely people who fight for and will benefit from it, another state, my state in fact, has voted to legalize cannabis. We're getting there, y'all. To answer a question I was recently asked by a couple of people, yes, I do always talk just like this, and I do always talk about odd, amazing, stupid, or interesting shit. And also, plus additionally, I am always freaking consciously and positively positive all the time. I've been actively spreading positive vibes for a long time now, and I have no intention of stopping. So for this show, I've something a little airy, something a little fairy, and something in a threplet of threes, because I like three things. See what I did right there? Shall we begin? So thing number one today is the sound of air. I had occasion this past weekend to be in the middle of nowhere on a clear night. After the long, 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 snowy, cloudy, cold winter here in Minnesota, I've been desperate for a clear night sky. The other night, I could scarce keep my eyes on the road because I had to keep looking up through the moonroof because the sky was so brilliant with stars. To be clear, I did stop for a bit so as not to endanger other late night drivers in the middle of nowhere, of which there were quite a few actually. As I looked up, I truly wished that I could make everyone look up. The Milky Way was right there. I didn't have to let my eyes adjust or anything to see the beauty. Of course, the longer I stared, the more cloudy and lovely it got. As I looked up and drank in the galaxy and smelled the clean, if kind of dusty, farmland Minnesota spring air, I found my brain counting the layers of the Earth's atmosphere. Yeah, I don't know why, it's what my brain does. I didn't get very far though. When I got only past the troposphere, where we live, which is 8 to 14.5 kilometers high, or 5 to 9 miles, to the stratosphere, which extends from the above-y bits of the troposphere to about 50 kilometers or 31 miles high, I got stuck remembering something I had recently read. Scientists have sent balloons into the atmosphere for decades, we all know this, taking all manner of readings. Some of those scientists found a bit of a mystery up there. At first, the stratosphere seems quiet, calm, silent even, but for the wind. But it isn't silent. Solar-powered balloons at 70,000 feet found a whole acoustic world up there. Some was wind, some was waves, some was other identifiable stuff, but some were strange, staticky infrasound whispers, which thus far have no explanation. Of course, we humans can't pick them out with just our ears, but the instruments did, and when the recordings are sped up a few thousand times, the staticky, muffled whispers appear. I hope they identify whatever it is as something perfectly normal rather than, like, I don't know, sky ghosts or something. Interpreting and understanding the sounds captured by the balloon-borne instruments is more than just to learn about our Earth and its atmosphere. It's also about laying the framework for studies on other worlds. We can and do surveil remote volcanic eruptions by studying their sound waves with balloons. They can also monitor earthquakes from the sky by measuring their sound waves, even from far away. One network of balloons detected and measured a 7.3 earthquake from a couple thousand miles away. Scientists say that once this method of measurement from balloons is tried and proven here on good old Terra, it can be used to learn about other worlds, starting perhaps with Venus. You can't touch down on Venus to figure out why it is like it is, at least not with anything still functioning, because the temperatures and pressures are just too great to withstand. However, the atmosphere is far more gentle, so balloons about 30 miles up and powered by helium could be the perfect way to explore Venus and other worlds. I wonder now what will be found up there in our own sky next, in the mesosphere, or the thermosphere, or the ionosphere, or the exosphere, and of course, far beyond. And I wonder what it will sound like.
Today, there's a beer for everyone.
Hey, me and the guys are going out for a beer. You want to come along?
Nah, I got a lot of data to enter into the computer tonight.
Now, there's a brew for the future.
Want me to bring you something back?
Thanks, but I got some right here.
Microsoft Brew.
You got a beer tap on your computer?
With a head so thick, you can float a mouse on it.
Let me get this straight. You make your own beer with the computer?
With the right software, you can do anything.
Microsoft Brew.
Here, I call this one Windows 95.
I don't know, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
And if you got to get there quicker, try the new ISDN malt liquor.
And now the time seems right for the TDIH, TDIH, this day in history. For today, May 22nd. Big event for this day was in 1960, when the most violent earthquake in recorded history struck off of the southern coast of Chile. This big bastard of a quake, known as the Great Chilean Earthquake, that seems fitting, measured a 9.5 and killed an estimated 5,700 people. It also created seismic sea waves in distant Hawaii and Japan, damaging and causing death and destruction in every coastal town between the 37th and 44th parallels. Born on this day in 1859 in Edinburgh, Scotland, was physician and author Sir Arthur Ignatius Conan Doyle, the man who wrote arguably one of the most recognized, enduring, and vivid characters around the world, Detective Sherlock Holmes. In 1887, he created Sherlock Holmes for A Study in Scarlet, the first of four novels, and 56 short stories about the wondrous Detective Holmes and his associate and friend, Dr. John Watson. Victor Hugo died in Paris at the age of 83 on May 22nd in 1885. The French poet, author, novelist, dramatist, and playwright was the most important among the French Romantic era writers. He founded a journal called the Conservatoire Littéraire, in which he published the poetry of his friends, as well as his own. His most famous works include The Hunchback of Notre Dame, first known as Notre Dame de Paris, and Les Misérables. Hugo was so loved in France that when he died, he received a hero's funeral. Even lying in state beneath the Arc de Triomphe before his burial in the Pantheon. 1826 saw the HMS Beagle departing on its first trip to survey Tierra del Fuego and Patagonia. The Royal Navy ship Beagle is famous for carrying English naturalist Charles Darwin, one of my favorite guys, on his around-the-world expedition in 1831 to 1836. In 1840, the transporting of convicts from Britain to the New South Wales colony in Australia was abolished. This meant that New South Wales was no longer a penal colony. It was, in fact, a free colony. I love Australia. Sydney is such a gorgeous city, and I can't wait to go back someday. In 1906, the Wright brothers, Wilbur and Orville, credited with inventing, building, and flying the first successful motor-operated airplane, were granted a patent for said amazing flying machine 3 years after applying for that patent. Apparently, Florida has always been a bit strange. In 1931 even, that's when the Arcadia Company started selling canned rattlesnake meat. A fellow named George Kenneth End couldn't raise vegetables on his scrubby farm, and he wasn't successful at canning pork either, but he did notice that he had a lot of rattlesnakes around. For some reason, he and his sons decided to see what those danger noodles might taste like. So Mrs. End, good lady that she was, fried some up, southern style, and a business was born. The meat from just one snake only filled 3 5-ounce cans, so there were a lot of leftover rattlesnakey bits. So End made jackets and shoes and belts to sell, sold venom to labs, and also sold crystallized snake gall and snake fat to pharmaceutical companies. This snaky empire of Mr. End ended when he met his end from a bite from a snake. In 1980, Toru Iwatani was fiddling with ideas for a game based on food that would appeal more to women. Grabbing a slice of pizza from a box, it hit him. The pizza left in the box, and now missing a slice, was the shape for the little dot-munching, maze-blazing yellow Pac-Man, one of the best-known video games ever, and still fun. Now, thing number two might just put one off of the popular fairy tale genre. Modern-day fairy tales always have perfectly beautiful, wonderful-looking, but emotionally unstable persons in key roles. Except for Shrek, of course. I love me some Shrek. Cinderella and Snow White and Ariel, though, enjoy far more beautiful lives than the same girls in the stories from which they originated. So here are just a few truths about three popular fairy tales. Did you know that Cinderella was not originally named Cinderella at all? This tale is nearly as old as time, like back in the 1st century BC, back in time. And the original teller of this particular tale, Strabo, called the heroine of his story Rhodopis. The modern tellings have the beautiful Cinderella swept from her feet by a prince, and her evil stepsisters ending in marrying a couple of lords, and everyone living happily ever after. The tales are still very similar, but the older version had no pumpkin become coach or slippers made of glass. Always in the background of the pretty modern Cinderella tale is one far, far, far more sinister. The variation written by the Brothers Grimm. Don't you love that name? Their version has the creepy and nasty stepsisters cutting off bits of their own feet in order to make them fit into the slippers, hoping the prince is an idiot and will be fooled. The ruse fails, though, when a couple of narky birds stick their noses in, literally, and a pair of pigeons peck the peepers out of the stepsisters' faces. The nasty sisters spend the remainder of their lives as blind beggars, while Cinderella lives her life in the lap of luxury with the prince. Snow White is another tale which started far more darkly than it is now told. In the modern tale, the queen exhorts the huntsman to kill Snow White and bring Snow's heart back to the queen as proof of her death. The huntsman can't kill the girl, however, so he brings instead the heart of a boar to the queen. In the original story, by those grimity grim grim grims again, it isn't the heart of Snow White that the evil queen wants, it's her lungs and her liver, which the queen wants to have for supper. Also in the original tale, Snow is jostled awake by the movement of the prince's horse as he takes her back to his castle, not by a sweet magic kiss. As to the queen in the original story, well, in the end, she is forced to dance in red-hot iron shoes until she dies. I'm still wondering what the hell the prince was going to do with an unalived girl at his castle. We all know Little Mermaid Ariel, who got so lucky as to be changed into a human so she and Eric could marry in a beautiful wedding attended by both merpeople and humans and fish and crabs and whales and all those. But the original tale was a sad, sad, very sad thing indeed. In Hans Christian Andersen's original version, the Little Mermaid watches the prince marry a princess, and she becomes despondent. She's actually even offered a knife with which to stab said prince, but instead of doing that, she flings herself into the sea, suiciding by turning herself into seafoam and froth. Even Hans thought that version a little bit much, as he himself modified the ending by changing dying when she turned to froth into her becoming a daughter of the air and waiting to go to heaven. Either way, Ariel dies alone in the end. And now for the GWOD, grandiloquent word of the day. The letter is D. The word is dactylion. It is a noun, and it means the tip of your middle finger, if you're a human, anyway. Used in a sentence, when I witness the defalcation in government and the blatant desnomy to cover and enforce the lies perpetrated by the current dulocracy, acting to put money in incorrect pockets, I experience a dysphoria, leading me to want to show those dickophobic douchebags both of my divine dactylions at the same time.
There was an old farmer who lived by a rock. He sat in the meadow, a shaking his fist at some boys who were down by the creek. Their feet in the water, their hands on their marbles and playthings. And in days of yore, there came a young lady. She looked like a pretty young creature. She sat on the grass. She pulled up her dresses and showed us her ruffles and laces. And white fluffy that white, she said she was learning a new way to bring up her children and learn them to knit. While the boys in the barnyard were shoveling refuse and litter from yesterday's hunt. While the girl in the meadow was rubbing her eyes at the fellows, as girls sometimes do, to make it quite clear that she wanted to go for a nice pleasant stroll on the grass and hurry back home for a nice piece of ice cream and cake that's the three layers tall. And after dessert, she was ready to go for another walk down by the dock with any young man with a sizable roll of 100s in a big bulge up front. If he'd ask politely, she'd show him her little pet dog who was subject to fits. Then maybe she'd let him grab hold of her small tender hands with a movement so quick. And she'd bend on over and suck on his soda so sweetly till she finished it. Then pull down her panties to rub on her hip that she bruised when she ran down the halls. Cause he tried to force her to lick on his candy so tasty made of butterscotch. And then he spread whipped cream all over her cookies that she had been baking all night. If you think this is dirty, you're fucking well right.
Okay, so I'm still getting guesses on the first mystery sound. Here it is. And no right guesses so far. First show of June, unless it's guessed before that, I'll reveal the source of the sound. The second sound is... And it, if not guessed, which no one has yet, will be revealed on the second episode of Three Things in June. I'm kind of a sound-loving person, as I'm sure you can tell, and this is super fun to me. If you think you have a sound that is odd enough that no one will know what it is, send it to me and we shall rule those with no knowledge together. Or not. If you have a guess as to the origin of either of the first two sounds, you can either email me, Jenna, at threethingspod@gmail.com. That's the number three, the word thingspod@gmail.com. Or leave a comment on whichever listening app or platform you use, or on the homepage of this show, threethings.podomatic.com. That's the number three, the word things.podomatic.com. As always, I look forward to hearing from you, lovely listener. And now, here's thing three. It's a thruple of thruples, just for fun. It's a weird world out there, and here are just a few of the strange things about it. In three groups of three, as is my wont. Here I am, queen. Here's some inventy kind of things. The guy who invented the main software enabling all of us to enjoy the World Wide Web, one Tim Berners-Lee, has one regret. He wishes he hadn't added the two backslashes after the HTTPS:// in web addresses when he wrote the programming. He looked back at it all in 2009 and said that leaving it out would have saved a lot of time and space. It really has no purpose, but was just kind of a standard in programming back then. So who do I call to get that time back that I've spent typing those extra characters? We've all heard it. That tension-building, excitement-growing countdown from 10 to 1 when a rocket is about to launch. I love a good countdown. But here's the thing. There's really not any good reason for it, as NASA can pause the clock at any given second to check on stuff, should stuff need to be checked upon. NASA actually got the idea to use a countdown from director Fritz Lang and his silent film from 1929, Frau im Mond, or Woman in the Moon. It does make blastoffs more exciting, though, doesn't it? In 1907, the first fully synthetic plastic, Bakelite, was accidentally created by Leo Hendrik Bakelant when he was trying to invent a replacement for shellac, a product derived from lac beetles. He combined phenol, a waste product of coal, with formaldehyde for some reason, and put heat to the mixture. The resulting material was nothing like the shellac he was going for, but he'd actually created a stress and heat-resistant polymer that was then used for clocks and jewelry and those cool old phones with the big handset that would clonk an intruder with. Tableware, lamps, just everything, really. This new thermosetting plastic was the first synthetic material to really stand on its own and be used in so many ways as to be a now ubiquitous material. Microplastics. I'm just saying. It's amazing what wonders can come from accident, though, isn't it? Here are some booty kind of things. Like bromelain, the stuff in pineapples that make it the fruit that eats you back. I wonder if lobsters, which actually have tiny bristles inside of their little pinchers that are the equivalent of human taste buds, can taste you when you eat them. Well, no, wait, that doesn't math because they're dead. Lobsters are odd too because their teeth are in their tummies. If you were to stack up all of the recipes ever cooked by every culture there is, all of those recipes, and all of their diverse flavors, and all of their cultural significance even, some 75% are made with only 5 animal species and 12 plants. I love bananas. Banana nut bread, banana ice cream, banana smoothie, banana cake, banana pudding, banana split, peanut butter and banana sandwiches, frozen bananas, bananas and muesli, banana cream pie, banana muffins, banana pancakes, bananas Foster, banana Laffy Taffy. I don't even care if they are radioactive. Mm-mm. You'd have to eat a veritable ton of natters for the radioactive potassium in them to have any effect on you. So eat the banana. And the white beans, apricots, spinach, salmon, yogurt, mushrooms, and avocados, all which seem to be on my grocery list. They're all freaking radioactive. Wait a minute. Maybe that green glow at night isn't the light from the courtyard. And here are some shieldy kind of things. Nature has her wonderful way of doing things, doesn't she? But sometimes she's a crazy lady, like the whole potato beetle. The larvae of the potato beetle avoid being eaten by bigger bugs by covering themselves in their own foul-smelling and poisonous poop. After dining on deadly nightshade plants, they reuse the toxic substances produced in their feces to create the fecal shield. Ugh. This gross, yet quite effective shield is excreted and then guided onto the backs of the larva through a series of wiggly abdominal muscle contractions. I'd probably rather just be eaten by a big bug, but I'm not a larva, so I have no perspective from their side. Some birds do it too. Yep, the Eurasian roller has some pretty smart babies. If they're threatened, they just barf up and roll around and spread that vomitus all over themselves. It's disgusting. This makes the once snackable little baby birds look horrendous and smell horrid, thereby making them less likely to become dinner. More, the parents, when away from the nest, can also smell the baby bird barf, even from quite a ways away, and come zipping back to save babies from what is usually a snake or a bird of prey. Eurasian rollers are the only bird seen to use barf to communicate. I guess you use the tools you got, huh? Waste not, want not, maybe? So gross. There's another little living thing that takes self-defense super seriously. The Malaysian exploding ant, in actual fact, blows itself up in defense of its colony. When attacked or threatened, the ant will violently contract its muscles to make glands filled with a sticky, poisonous, irritating, corrosive goo shoot out of its body and onto its attacker. This goo not only restrains the attacker, but it can also kill. In the animal world, only ants and a couple of termite species practice autolysis, or rupturing one's own body to self-sacrifice themselves in defense of their brethren. I don't know if it's nice or not. It's just cool and gross. that's a wrap for today. I, Jenna, hope I've been a little learnful, a little laughful, and a lot at least listenable. I'll be back again next week with more, so subscribe to get new episodes hot off the press, or at least the equivalent of said press in this modern era. If one were to have questions or comments or anything else of the sort, one could always feel free to email me, Jenna, at threethingspod@gmail.com, or leave a comment on my page or on whichever platform or app you use to listen, or on the homepage of the show, threethings.podomatic.com. That's the number three, the word things.podomatic.com. You could also buy me a coffee if you'd like. I know I'd like it. To do that, just visit ko-fi.com/threethings. That's the number three and the word things. Don't forget to remember to take a stab at those mysterious sounds. I've still not got a correct guess. Am I just far too good at picking strange sounds, or am I just really lucky? The universe may never know. At this point of the cast, I like to always do the same thing because I think it's really a thing that folks should really do, at least once in a while. It's an easy thing. Just find your eyes in something reflective, look into those pretty eyes of yours, and be serious now. Whatever you may need to forgive in yourself for this one day, and there's always at least a little something, do that forgiving of you, and be happy. Oh, also, have a good day, y'all. I said good day.